Good morning. This is 5 at 8. Today's Monday, April 15th, 2024. And here's Linda Carlisle and Mark Overman with today's top news. In this episode, we'll talk about Iran launching unprecedented attacks on Israel, Russia intensifying attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, the debate in the science community over space missions, Americans saving less after each recession, and the possibility of former President Donald Trump losing his right to vote in the 2024 election if convicted. Story number one. In a report from the New York Times, Iran launched unprecedented attacks on Israel over the weekend, challenging Israel's belief that greater aggression would deter Iran. The strikes were in response to an Israeli attack in Syria that killed Iranian military officials. The attacks showed Iran's willingness to directly confront Israel rather than through proxies. Israel's assumptions about Iran's retaliation capabilities have been overturned. Can we really blame Iran for hitting back, Linda? I mean, Israel had it coming. They've been picking at Iran like a bully for years without expecting a direct retaliation. I'd say Iran's response was a strategic move that took Israel by surprise.
Mark, while I understand your perspective, it's important to note that violence begets violence. Israel's actions may have been aggressive, but Iran's decision to retaliate directly rather than through proxies marks a dangerous escalation. It's not just about Israel and Iran anymore, it's about the stability of the entire region.
But Linda, isn't it about time Iran stood up for itself? You can't expect a country to keep absorbing hits without fighting back. And honestly, this could well serve as a wake-up call for Israel to rethink its strategies.
Mark, it's not about standing up. It's about the broader consequences of such actions. This could potentially plunge the entire region into a conflict of far greater magnitude. And let's not forget, Iran's decision to announce its intentions publicly before the attack was a clear attempt to provoke Israel and assert dominance, not just an act of self-defense.
Well, Linda, you can't deny it was a smart move, giving Israel time to prepare. It minimized the damage, showing that Iran's intentions were not just to destruct, but to send a message. They're not the passive player they once were.
True, Mark. But this new paradigm is fraught with risks. If other nations follow suit, switching from deterrence to direct retaliation, we might be looking at a much more volatile geopolitical scenario. It's not about who's smart or who's strong. It's about promoting peace and understanding, not escalating conflicts.
Story number two. In a report from CNN, Russia has intensified its attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, focusing on power plants with precision and concentration. The attacks have caused significant damage, leading to power outages in several regions. Ukraine is now considering shifting to smaller, more dispersed power plants to enhance resilience. The country is also seeking increased imports and air defenses to protect its energy grid. Why, Linda, it's mind-boggling to think about the precision and intensity of these recent Russian attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure. Russia's ability to amass a cache of high-precision weapons and intelligence to pull off such a calculated strategy is, frankly, chilling.
Yes, it's deeply concerning. But I think it's important to consider the broader implications of Russia's actions. These are not just attacks on power plants or substations. They're attacks on hospitals, homes, and schools. They're attacks on the very livelihood of the Ukrainian people.
True, Linda. But I think we also have to acknowledge the strategic aspect of it. By targeting the energy infrastructure, Russia is effectively crippling Ukraine's ability to function normally. It's a tactic that's been used before in warfare, and it can be devastatingly effective.
I understand your point, Mark, but it's not just about the strategic aspect. These attacks are causing immense human suffering. The Ukrainian people are literally being plunged into darkness and cold, forced to cook on camping stoves and perform surgeries by flashlight. It's a humanitarian crisis of epic proportions.
Oh, no doubt about it, Linda. The human toll is staggering, but let's not forget that Ukraine has shown remarkable resilience in the face of these attacks, repairing their power grid, creating alternative sources of energy, and even considering a shift in how they produce their energy. That's something, isn't it?
Yes, Mark. It's a testament to their spirit and determination. But resilience alone can't negate the fact that these attacks are a clear violation of international law and basic human rights. The global community needs to do more to support Ukraine and hold Russia accountable for its actions.
Story number three. In a report from Washington Post, the science community is debating which space missions are worth the investment due to limited resources. the costly flagship missions like the Webb telescope can overshadow smaller missions. Chandra, an X-ray telescope, may not produce as visually appealing images as other telescopes, but has made significant discoveries, including capturing a black hole shredding a star and finding the oldest, most distant black hole ever seen. Did you know, Linda, that Chandra, an X-ray telescope, has been contributing immensely to our knowledge of the universe, even without the celebrity status of Hubble or Webb space telescopes? It's kind of the underdog of space exploration. It's not producing poster-worthy images, but it's been key in the discovery of a supermassive black hole 13 billion light-years away. That's no small feat.
Absolutely. It goes to show that value in scientific exploration isn't always about the wow factor or the visibility of the project to the public. The Chandra X-ray Telescope is an example of a relatively smaller mission that's making significant discoveries. It reminds me of the Mars rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. They were smaller missions compared to the more recent Perseverance, but made groundbreaking discoveries about Mars's geology and climate.
You're spot on, Linda. It's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, the Webb telescope, despite its astronomical cost, pun intended, has been a huge success. It's advanced our understanding of the universe in ways previously unimaginable. Yet it's also been dubbed the telescope that ate astronomy because of how much of the budget it consumed. It's like the New York Yankees of telescopes, hogging up all the resources.
Interesting analogy, Mark. And it's interesting to think about how we, as a society, value different types of scientific exploration. It's a complex issue. On one hand, flagship missions like the Webb telescope can lead to major breakthroughs and inspire public interest in science. On the other hand, smaller missions like Chandra, although less flashy, contribute significant findings and may be more cost-effective. It's a delicate balance, isn't it?
It sure is, Linda. It kind of mirrors the debates we often see in other sectors, like education or healthcare, where the allocation of resources can significantly impact the outcomes. It's a tough call to make, but I guess the key is to find a middle ground, where we can fund the trailblazing projects like the Webb, while still ensuring the Chandras of the world get their fair share too.
It's a reminder that scientific progress is not just about the big, flashy discoveries, but also the steady, incremental progress made by smaller missions. It's a conversation that's important, not just for the scientific community, but for all of us, as it impacts how we understand our universe and our place in it.
Story number 4. Americans are saving less after each recession, according to Wells Fargo economists. This trend has continued, with the personal saving rate dropping to 3.6% in February, the lowest in over a year. This could leave households vulnerable, especially those with low incomes. The recent surge in consumer spending may be linked to this lower saving rate. Meanwhile, a third of U.S. companies are considering implementing four-day work weeks to combat worker burnout and attract talent. According to CNN, this news was reported. There's something to be said about the resilience of the American consumer, Linda. Despite economic downturns and even a global pandemic, spending habits seem to remain robust. It's like we've all got this shop-till-you-drop mentality.
But that resilience, as admirable as it is, can potentially lead to vulnerability. The fact that the saving rate is falling, particularly after recessions, could leave many households exposed to financial risks, especially those with lower incomes.
Absolutely, and it's a worrisome trend. But on the other hand, you got to look at the other side of the coin. This decrease in savings has been a major driver of consumer spending, which in turn has kept our economy going, right?
Yes, that's true. But we need to consider the long-term sustainability of this behavior. With inflation and interest rates on the rise, the reliance on credit and income could become problematic. It's like sailing in a boat with a slow leak. You might not notice it at first, but it can eventually lead to disaster.
Well, you've got a point there, Linda. And speaking of changes, what do you make of the discussions around the four-day work week? Do you think that could also impact how people manage their finances and spending habits?
A shorter work week could potentially lead to changes in income and thus spending and saving patterns. It's a complex issue, and like the shift in savings behavior, it's all interconnected with the larger economic picture. We live in interesting times, indeed.
Story number 5. Former President Donald Trump faces the possibility of losing his right to vote in the 2024 election if convicted in any of the 88 felony charges he faces. The first trial begins in New York, where a conviction could impact his voting status in Florida. The complexity of Trump's eligibility to vote highlights the confusion faced by individuals with prior convictions or facing trials in states where they do not vote. According to NPR reports. Do you ever get the feeling that the rules are unnecessarily complicated, Linda? Take this whole Trump situation as a case in point. Now, I understand that voting rights differ from state to state for convicted felons. But the fact that whether or not Trump can vote in the upcoming election could depend on where he is convicted, if he is convicted, well, it just makes my head spin.
I understand what you're saying, Mark. It is indeed a complex issue. It's not just about Trump. The same applies to all individuals with felony convictions. It's a patchwork of state laws and regulations. In some states, voting rights are automatically restored after serving time. In others, individuals have to go through a process to regain their voting rights. This can be confusing, especially for individuals who have criminal convictions in states different from where they're registered to vote.
Right. Florida, for instance, only restores voting rights after the individual has completed their sentence, including any outstanding fines. But then you've got states like Vermont and Maine, along with Washington, D.C., where felons never lose their voting rights in the first place. It's a real spectrum of regulations, isn't it?
Yes, Mark. It's a landscape that can be difficult to navigate, even for legal experts. And it's not just about the rules in each state. There's also the question of how these rules are interpreted. For example, Florida has interpreted its statute to say that a felony conviction in another state can make a person ineligible to vote in Florida. But this is only if the conviction would also make the person ineligible to vote in the state where they were convicted.
That's just wow. So, hypothetically, if Trump is convicted in New York, where he's currently facing charges but doesn't serve any prison time, he could still vote in Florida.
Right. New York only restricts the voting rights of people convicted of felonies while they are incarcerated. So, in theory, Trump could lose his voting rights due to the New York case, but only if he gets convicted and sentenced to prison time. However, legal experts believe this to be highly unlikely.
It's a tangle of laws, that's for sure. Just makes me wonder, should there be a universal standard? Would that make things easier, or is it important to let each state handle this issue in its own way?
That's a great question, Mark, and one without an easy answer. On one hand, a universal standard could make things clearer for convicts and officials alike. On the other hand, states have historically had the power to regulate voting within their borders. Striking a balance between discouraging criminal behavior and upholding the democratic principle of universal suffrage is a challenge that continues to evolve.
That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.